from the Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting information relating to the termination of the Community Advocates Northside Crisis Resource Center contract. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ms. Sugarich, who's our Community Services Branch Director, and Amy Lorenz, who's our Crisis Services Director, will give a brief overview of the report.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Supervisors. We appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you today to report the information related to this item. I wanted to first address the concern that was raised by Health and Human Needs Committee regarding the abrupt closure of the Crisis Resource Center located on the north side. Hopefully, during the time that we have with you today, we will be able to provide with you information regarding the communications that the Behavioral Health Division had with community advocates over the past six-month period of time related to concerns that were shared in regards to the delivery of services under the DHS 34, which is the Emergency Services or Crisis Administrative Code, and then also in regards to what the requirements are for the capacity to build down Medicaid and provide crisis or emergency services within Milwaukee County. I first wanted to address with you just in regards to how audits are conducted within the Community Services Branch. In no way is a vendor ever singled out for an audit. There is a discussion regarding programs that are audited on an annual basis, and the audits are conducted by the staff in the Community Services Branch. So realistically, what is covered in the audit is the ability for the vendor to be able to deliver services as was identified in either a request for proposal or the program requirements that were submitted to the county related to the financing that is received for the administration of the program. Audits are also conducted in accordance with the purchase of service contract requirements that were approved by the Health and Human Needs Committee in regards to policy and asked of us to implement in regards to quality assurance protocols. And last but not least, but probably the most important, is if the program is governed under state statute or administrative code, the vendor's ability to comply with what those respective requirements are. In the delivery of crisis services in Milwaukee County, crisis services can only be delivered by the county. It is the authority of the county. It is the responsibility of the county to deliver those emergency services. So in no way can a vendor act independent or administer services and is as an independent entity outside of the county because of the authority and the responsibility that the county has in the delivery and administration of crisis services. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Director Lorenz to discuss the timeline that is in front of you today.
Madam Chair and Supervisors, I want to review with you the timeline of the communications with community advocates and also the technical support that was provided during that six-month period with the agency. As Director Gottich reviewed, is that it is the Milwaukee County's responsibility to assure that all standards of Administrative Code DHS 34 for emergency mental health services is completed under our certification and community advocates, as being a contracted provider of those services, we need to meet all of those standards as listed in DHS 34. In community advocates' RFP response dated April 6 of 2012, they made the statements of agreement that they would be in compliance with DHS 34 standards by June 2012. So to ensure that Community Advocates was actually in compliance with DHS 34 standards and the assurances that they made in their RFP response, an audit was completed. On December 1st, Community Advocates was informed that a site visit would be occurring on December 12th. And in that notification, it was also noted that previously that this had been verbally discussed with community advocates that an audit would be occurring to make sure that they were meeting all requirements of DHS 34 standards. On December 4th, Community Advocates was given all three copies of the audit tools that would be utilized. So in terms of crisis stabilization, they would have all the information knowing exactly what would be audited as far as their site being reviewed, their client records being reviewed, and also their personnel records to make sure they were up to DHS 34 standards. On December 12th and 13th, that first audit was completed at Community Advocates Northside Community Resource Center. On January 10th, BHD sent a letter to community advocates informing them of the results and a full report of the results from the audit, and also informing them that they needed to complete a corrective action plan to make sure to so that they would be able to meet the standards and that they would have to implement changes to start to be more in line with DHS 34 standards. And we're given a timeline of 45 days to complete that corrective action plan. On February 10th, community advocates submitted their first version of their corrective action plan. This was reviewed, and on March 1st, community advocates was informed that they would have to complete a second version of a corrective action plan due to lack of specificity and that they were in need of further development in their corrective action plan. On March 8th, community advocates submitted a second version of their corrected action plan. This version was again reviewed, and a letter was sent on March 25th to community advocates, letting them know that, again, they would need to revise this version and that they would need further clarification and development of the corrective action plan. On April 9th, Community Advocates sends in an amended corrective action plan, which is their third attempt. On May 2nd, we then reviewed it and let them know that further information needed to be added into their corrective action plan. On May 2nd, Community Advocates submitted a revised corrective action plan, was their fourth attempt at completing a corrective action plan that would meet standards. On May 23rd, BHD sent a letter to community advocates informing them that this fourth version would be accepted in its entirety and met all standards and corrections that would be required and needed to bring their agency to the standards of DHS 34. On May 29th, BHD, we went again to the Northside CRC to complete a second audit to assure that they had implemented everything that was promised in their fourth version of the corrective action plan, and to again audit all clinical records, personnel files, and also their site policy and procedures and their site notifications to that of DHS 34. During that time frame from December to June, throughout that time, community advocates, we were giving them technical support in regards to consultation, clinical needs, administrative policy and procedures that would be in need, and quality assurances. On January 11th, there was a meeting with Latrice Hogan, Joe Volk, Andy Elliott, Jim Kubicek, Jennifer Whitwer, Sylvia Cortez, and myself at the Northside CRC. At that meeting, we reviewed the results of the first audit and the needed completion of their corrective action plan. We reviewed the DHS 34 standards for crisis plans and for service notes. At this meeting, community advocates decided that they would begin to implement and complete crisis plans on every individual accepted to the Northside CRC. At that time, we discussed with community advocates and shared with them the BHD actual form of the crisis plan that we utilize at BHD, and recommended that they would be able to utilize that form as well, and that we already know that that form meets all DHS 34 standards, so that if they implemented that, they would meet and completed the crisis plans properly, they would meet all standards under DHS 34 as far as it goes for crisis plans. On January 17th, I met with Ms. Hogan and reviewed all components needed for improvement and for them to be in compliance with DHS 34 and the audit. From this meeting, I took copies of all policy and procedures being utilized at the Crisis Resource Center. I personally reviewed, edited, and commented on all of their policy and procedures to assist community advocates in meeting the standards of DHS 34, and then return those to Ms. Hogan so that they could be implemented into their policies and procedures. On January 21st, I shared clinical supervision forms with Ms. Hogan for community advocates' use, revision, to be able to be utilized so that, they had forms that could be implemented into their clinical supervision policy and procedure, their tracking forms for the completion of clinical supervision, and any educational requirements that are required on an annual basis as per DHS 34. On January 29th, I shared the BHD death reporting policy and procedure with Ms. Hogan so she could reference that and use that in writing their policy and procedure that would be needed for the CRC at Community Advocates as per DHS 34. That is a specific policy and procedure as per 34 that needs to that each agency needs to have. On February 5th, I met with Ms. Hogan so she could ask any questions regarding the feedback that I had given her regarding policies and procedures to review progress that they were making in terms of their corrective action plans and their improvements that were occurring at the Crisis Resource Center. We briefly reviewed the plan of correction at that time. And that time it was recommended that to Ms. Hogan that they needed to add substantial details into that plan of correction and a lot more detail as to what they were going to do to assure that those improvements were being made and to audit that those improvements, in fact, were in place. On February 12th, a meeting was scheduled between myself and Ms. Hogan for the purpose of reviewing the status of their improvements. This meeting was canceled by Ms. Hogan and was rescheduled for March 19th. On February 20th, I gave information to Ms. Hogan regarding the completion of crisis plans, notification, and the distribution of crisis plans so that she could further understand that process. On February 22nd, in our discussions regarding crisis plans, I noticed qualifications that were listed of a staff member at the Crisis Resource Center, and I was concerned that that individual may be practicing clinically and did not meet the standards of 34. So I inquired with Ms. Hogan on February 22nd. On March 1st, Community Advocates was able to provide the qualifications of this clinical staff member to show that she could be employed under DHS 34. On March 19th, there was a meeting between Ms. Hogan, Joe Volk, Walter Lux, with myself to review their second version of the plan of correction that had been submitted. During that meeting, we reviewed crisis plans, the procedures for plans. We discussed at length the difference between crisis plans versus a response plan because many of their questions and their language was occurring where they would ask a question about a crisis plan, but would be a standard regarding a response plan. So we discussed that for quite some time so they could understand and delineate the difference between crisis plan, response plan, and clinical service notes, which are three levels of the documentation required under DHS 34. During that meeting, we also discussed policy and procedures, billing issues and concerns that Community Advocates raise, their submitted plan of correction, and other issues related to DHS 34 and questions that they had in regards to that. On April the 11th, there was a meeting between Ms. Hogan, Joe Volk, Andy Elliott, Todd Campbell, Kathy Eilers, Jim Kubicek, Susan Gottage, Jennifer Whitwer, myself, Beth Collier, and Melody Joyner, who are parts of our quality assurance team at BHD. We met at BHD to discuss Community Advocates' third version of the corrective action plan. During that meeting, this group of individuals actually went page by page through the third version of the corrective action plan. In that time, we made recommendations to Community Advocates as to what could be included in their corrective action plan to help them meet standards. We answered questions. We explained areas of 34 to more detail to be able to help them to understand 34 and to meet the standards and to be able to submit a corrective action plan that would be approved. On April 18th, I again received the policy and procedures of Community Advocates and personally reviewed all of their policy and procedures in which I made notes, recommendations, and recommendations for improvements throughout those policies and procedures so that their policies and procedures could meet DHS 34 standards of the 13 policies that are required under DHS 34. In addition to those that support that I've outlined, there were also some phone calls between myself and Ms. Hogan, at least two conversations between myself, phone conversations between myself and Andy Elliott, answering questions regarding DHS 34, clinical supervision, a multitude of questions. Now, I did not then include those in the report because I do not know exactly what date I had those phone conversations, but we We attempted to make ourselves available via phone, email, and any other way to be able to answer questions and be in support of helping community advocates meet DHS 34 standards, as we are very committed to having this resource on the north side of our community and for having community advocates be successful. We provided all of these supports as much as we could through that six-month period of time, and in the final review of the final audit that occurred on May 29th, standards were still not met.
All right, Supervisor Schmidt, and then Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Minister. I presume we have similar questions. I mean, so we've got a lot of response from the Crisis Resource Center and their surveys and et cetera, et cetera. So it's, I mean, we need to get in. It's good you have all this documented, obviously. So at the end of this documentation, end of April, was it understood that unless there were immediate changes, they would not continue in their contract? That'd be my first question, please.
Supervisor Luigi Schmidt is asking, was it expressed at the April meeting that if this criteria was not met, that the contract would be ended?
That's my question. Thank you.
At the end of the April meeting, what was discussed was the need for compliance with DHS 34. Services cannot be provided by by entities unless they are in compliance with 34. There was a discussion that was made after the last audit in which there were demonstration of lack of compliance with 34, that the vendor was nearing the termination of their contract. It was not an information was not put in writing. It was information that was shared orally during a discussion after the very last site visit. But there was a sense between the Behavioral Health Division and the community advocates that there was a need for transition of service from the awarded vendor.
I'm not sure I got the answer.
We didn't explicitly put in writing the termination, but there was an understanding that they were out of compliance with services.
All right. And when was the contract supposed to end?
It was a calendar year contract.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm a layman trying to understand this and getting two views, and I think we all agree we need something. And this Crisis Resource Center has been proven to be successful, certainly on the south side. The board talked long and hard over budgets the last few years that the north side needed something. Obviously, we need something like this. So am I wrong in making an analogy here? I mean, we'll get your report, BHD report, next. And it's a long litany of state problems with BHD. And it seems to me that we were on this parallel path here a little bit, is that BHD has a chance to respond to everything the state has, and sometimes you say, well, this isn't really fair. We really didn't know that, or you're changing the rules on us, or you're making us go beyond what we would expect. I'm wondering if it's similar here. I mean, I remember when we had long discussions, and I think it's a legitimate analogy, I want to make it. It was with Big Step and stuff, and the administration put some stuff on them, and they didn't really understand, and audit had to come in, and so I guess, am I presuming, or may I presume that this Crisis Resource Center, this staff, should be aware of all these things and really be up to snuff and be up to running and can do all these things? I mean, is there not a chance like BHD has had to make changes, adaptions to what the state has mandated or things we have to do? So there's obviously plenty of evidence that you're giving them a lot of suggestions or raising concerns, et cetera, but is this... is it worth closing? I haven't heard that, and I haven't heard that you told them that unless they do this, then they're gone. I didn't see that in any of this. Okay, so when that came, was that a super shock, or all this, said, hey, anybody can figure out that you don't change immediately. I mean, we're not giving you the contract anymore. And the state was doing the same kind of things to us. I mean, so I'm trying to understand. I mean, what latitude we give? Do we say that, is there growing pains involved in these kinds of things? I mean, this is a hard business. BHD is a hard business. I understand that, okay? And it's tough to meet all these requirements. You need time. We've tried to give BHD and supported BHD all through the years in these kinds of similar, say, well, we got problems. Well, it's a tough environment. There are going to be problems. I understand that. I don't know if everybody does. Okay? I presume it's the same kind of analogy you can make for the Crisis Resource Center and the people who work there and do, you know, are they expected to pick all the stuff for everybody? Is there not growing pains here, too? Is there not a chance for them to... I mean, you got plenty of examples here, okay? But are they supposed to get it right away? I mean, then what's the alternative? I mean, who's going to be better? You know, I saw something from... I don't know if it was from Mr. Colon himself or from... that we can vote independence first. Well, who picks this up then if we don't give them the contract? I mean, there's, I mean, and won't they have the same growing pains and have to go through the same kinds of things? So, I mean, I'm just trying to logically look at it from a layman's perspective and see what's all going on. I see a lot of analogies with what you had to do with the state and what you have to do with the Crisis Resource Center. So, I mean, I don't know where we're going or what the alternative is then, and I'm concerned about that, I think, as we all should be. So, I don't know, that's maybe not a great question, but that's just my feelings on it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get some kind of response, possibly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Mr.
Colon? Madam Chair and Supervisor Schmidt, I just want to, you heard that there was a lot of opportunity and engagement to really try to get community advocates up to code and standard. So you heard that very thorough presentation from Ms. Lorenz. And so... We wanted to make sure that we were putting the time necessary to make sure that they were being successful. So I feel very confident we did that. I also feel very confident that we have a transition plan. This is a very important program, and we want to continue the program. And so you're right in that MCFI has run a very successful program on the south side, and being that they were the only other vendor that competed for that award, we have approached them, and staff, and also perhaps MCFI can come up a little later and speak a little bit about what they'd like to do. But in the immediate, we do have a transition. We have capacity in the community to be able to serve these individuals, both through our crisis stabilization beds and also through the Southside Crisis Resource Center. And the fact of the matter is that the Northside Crisis Resource Center, their census wasn't very high, and so that's why we thought about all of this, or staff thought about all of this before they made this recommendation, to ensure that services are not disrupted. And they feel very confident that with the immediate transition plan and the longer transition plan, that we will be able to serve these individuals. And we're also committed to ensuring that there's a Northside Crisis Resource Center. So with that said, I don't know if staff...
I think probably the only thing that I could just add to what Director Colon has said, and Supervisor Schmidt, those are very fair questions that you have asked. Again, I think one of the things is that all of the vendors were held to the same standard, and to be able to provide a relationship with the vendor to ensure that they would be able to get into compliance with DHS 34 was an expectation that was laid out in the request for proposal, and in the response that we received from community advocates, it was articulated and demonstrated that this was something that they would provide to us. There were four iterations of the corrective action plan, and I mean, we can always, you know, go back and say, should we have given them a fifth? Should we have given them a sixth? I mean, I think it gets to the point where we have to have a general understanding of the vendor's capacity and ability to be able to deliver the service, as was demonstrated in their application and as in alignment and requirement for DHS 34, and also with the standards that we hold other vendors, you know, to and uphold them to. Is that, you know, I think that that's one of the issues is of fairness and in regards to the number of corrective action plans that we ask of other vendors to.
Okay. So I just want to clarify. So at the inception of the Northside Crisis Resource Center, we did send a service out for RFP. There were two people that responded to the RFP, one being community advocates, one being MCFI, and at that time the decision was made that community advocates was a better choice or a different choice, or
they were the selected vendor based on the outcome of the request for proposal and the scoring. That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So Supervisor Schmidt.
Milwaukee Center for Independence is what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's TLS.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got a few questions, but Ms. Hogan, who is Ms. Hogan, and could you indicate her role and her significance in this process, because you mentioned her name a lot.
Yes, Supervisor. I'm unsure of her exact title, but she was functioning as, I believe, as the director of the Crisis Resource Center. Mm-hmm. She has other duties inside of Community Advocates, and that I believe she is also the director of the Milwaukee Women's Center. So I know she was functioning in that capacity. The actual title given to her at Community Advocates could be different, but she was supervising, implementing, in implementing the services at the Northside Crisis Resource Center.
Okay. And I'm just curious, the extensive support, the many opportunities that you have indicated that you have given Community Advocates, the significant time that you spent, and the four different revisions of the plan, are you saying they didn't do nothing? I mean, all this support, time, opportunity, and there was no progress? I don't understand that. It was very detailed report, all those dates, all those times. What were they doing? Nothing?
Supervisor, in the second audit, we did see small improvement areas. One of the greatest areas in which they improved was to meet the standards of the crisis plan as per DHS 34. Their implementation of the BHD crisis plan form was of great assistance to them in being able to meet those standards.
Okay. All right. And in the application process, Supervisor Schmidt, help me think about this. That was a good point. Is there anywhere in the application process where if you do not, live up to the standards, that you will be terminated?
That's in the purchase of service agreement,
okay.
Supervisor.
Okay. And then in the purchase of service agreement, does it indicate what, how much time you get, or what stage you'll be terminated, because I understand that you had four different versions of the correction plan.
Madam Chair, Supervisor, those are two different issues. In the purchase of service agreement, there is a clause for 30-day notice for termination of the contract. Mm-hmm. But then we also have quality assurance protocols that are embedded within the purchase of service contract that all of our vendors sign off on. Mm-hmm. And that is one area of indication that, does require the vendor to remain in compliance with the purchase of service agreement and protocols for Milwaukee County.
Okay. And the last question, July 15th was the closure day, correct?
That was Monday, yes, sir.
Okay, so how many patients were transferred, and where they go, and was it successful, and how was the process?
Supervisor, the Crisis Resource Center actually closed prior to July 15th. To my knowledge, their last client left there on July 10th. There was one client that we did transition to our crisis stabilization home on that date. To my knowledge, that was the one individual that needed to be transferred into another level of care. There could have been others who were transitioned to other types of services, but I don't have that information.
Okay. Director Cologne, do you have an update on the closure and where the clients?
No. Okay. What Ms. Lorenz mentioned is what it is.
Supervisor, we had asked the Crisis Resource Center to limit their admissions even prior to their closure date, so that come the end of the closure, there would not be other individuals that would require transfer and further services. But for example, there was one individual who did still require that level of care and had needs, so that on that day we did transfer him to the crisis stabilization houses.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Lorenz, if you could, can you explain to this body, because I think we're all very concerned, what happens now when the police are called to someone's home and they are in need of Again, not an emergency detention, but some type of emergency mental health or respite mental health care. Where now on the north side of Milwaukee, what exactly happens in that situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, now they are still able to utilize the Southside Crisis Resource Center. They can also make contact with our crisis mobile team. To be able to come to be able to look to see other options and other abilities to stabilize that individual. And actually, as of yesterday, our mobile team specifically for MPD, which is the Crisis Assessment and Response Team, the CART team, actually started yesterday. So they will be in the community and they will be able to be dispatched as the second responder to all calls for individuals who may be in need of mental observation or who, upon the police arriving, realize that this is a person who needs an assessment for an emergency detention. We now have a team of an officer and a clinician who will be able to respond, who will then complete the assessment, look to utilize that individual's own natural supports and any other alternatives that they can utilize to stabilize that individual in the moment so that they do not require an increased level of care. Some options may be to use a crisis resource center. It may be to have the individual access medications. It may be to have them maybe go and stay with a family member for the evening. We will look to work with the individual to find any type of alternatives that could work for him or her.
Okay. And what is the reality of an admission into the Southside Crisis Resource Center? Because in my experience, they are almost always full. And so is that really a viable option? I mean, obviously it is if you're, it's kind of like DV shelters. If you're lucky enough to get that bed, then, you know, then you're there. But the reality is that the bed probably is not available. Is that a fair assessment?
Madam Chair, at the Crisis Resource Center on the south side, we do work in great collaboration with that at that facility, that if there is not a crisis resource bed available, we can look to our crisis stabilization beds, of which we have 24 in the community. And in fact, 8 of those beds are inside the Southside CRC facility, so that if officers are looking for an alternative and Crisis Resource Center is full, Crisis Resource Center will contact the crisis mobile team. We will look to see if we have availability in our crisis stabilization house, and we will look to make that happen. Of course, there are times when we are at full capacity, but we have numerous beds that we can utilize in the system, whether that means the individual that the police are with and are concerned about goes directly to the crisis resource center, or the possibility that he or she may go to the crisis stabilization house, or even if that person needs that level of care, we can look to see if there's another person at CRC that may be more appropriate to CSH and make some movements within our bed capacity.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there any other questions from the committee for either Mr. Colon, Ms. Gaddish, or Ms. Lorenz? Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question about, first, I guess I'll start with the decision to stop service, right, and being okay with stopping service on a crisis resource. What was weighed in that decision making? Looking at the amount of beds that were used at the Northside CRC, and looking at whether the other beds available in the system that we could, balance out until we get another provider.
Supervisor Bowen, we took many things into consideration, but the biggest issue that we took into consideration is that community advocates over a 6-month period of time could not raise their standards of the care that they were providing to individuals at the home to that of a clinical facility, and they could not raise the care to the level of meeting the standards of DHS 34. Of course, we did look to see other alternatives, and one of the things is the reason why we, worked through them with 4 versions of the corrective action plan and went through that and went through a second audit was in hopes of getting the standards met to that so that we could with confidence say that Community Advocates is meeting all assurances that they put in their RFP response dated started April 6th and are meeting all standards of DHS 34, which we as Milwaukee County, we are the individuals that must make sure that that is being adhered to. And that was the greatest level of it, is that the clinical information, if you review the results of the audit, were so low that we had to make that decision.
Okay, and I guess the RFP process for another vendor, it really was an option to extend programming with community advocates through the RFP process?
Supervisor Bowen, we needed to make a decision at that point to give them notice of termination of their contract, mm-hmm. and could not continue on with the level of care that was being provided there as we look to open another facility.
Okay. And the audit that we were provided in the packet has a strike through on page 7, referring to the December 12th and 13th. Audit, but replaces it with the May 29th, 2013. I just want an explanation on that strike through.
Yes, Supervisor Brown, that was an error with a track change on the computer system and should be May 29th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I have a question for you.
Yep.
I'm probably sure we have speakers on this item.
Yes.
Just make it sure.
That's why I wanted to know if any other, if anybody else, any committee members have other additional questions for either Director Colon or these two lovely ladies. We'll get them out of the way. No?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So I'm going to bring up Joel Volk. There's two reasons. First of all, he did fill out a blue card, but the second reason is that this item originally was placed on our agenda as a report from Mr. Volk regarding the customer satisfaction survey that was completed. I wanted to give some good news about the Northside CRC, and then unfortunately in the midst of then and now, was notified that the decision had been made to close the Northside CRC. So obviously we want to give Mr. Volk the opportunity to let this be a teaching moment for us and to figure out how we, because I think we all agree this is a critical, the Northside CRC, the CRCs period, are critical to being able to move to a community-based model. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. And so we want to make sure that at least for this body, as the body that oversees those programs and services and approval of such, that we have a good understanding of what we can do better, what we should be trying to do better in the future. So thank you, Mr. Volk.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for this opportunity. My goodness, based upon what DHS, BHD staff has reported to you, it sounds like we have rapes, sexual assaults. We have people with, you know, broken necks that aren't getting services. We even perhaps are running a, you know, restaurant without the appropriate licensure. We don't have, and that we might even have people, you know, beating each other up. Many times. The reality is that we had none of that. All of the issues that are in the audit, all of them, there's not one client grievance, there's not one client complaint, there's no allegations of that we didn't treat people right. In fact, you know, I didn't hire Vital Voices to come out and do a consumer survey. BHD, this is their contractor to do consumer satisfaction surveys. I urge you to read this. Now, were we having some struggles on file documentation? Yeah, we were. I mean, I will certainly admit that. But at the end of the day, if you look at the kind of comments that we got from the people that we served, I stand by the staff, and we were well on our way to working through those file documentation issues. Not one health or safety issue in those audits. It all comes down to things that are in the file. Madam Chair, because of the fire, and I don't know what you're getting from us and what you aren't, I just wanted to. This is. Excuse me.
Oh, Martin, you want to? Okay. Martin will take those from you. Thank you.
You may have gotten this via email.
This was a very thorough report, mm-hmm. and. So I hope we probably haven't.
Yeah. So you know, the BHD staff would have you believe that we weren't keeping track of anything, that we weren't documenting anything. Well, obviously, you know, this report shows that we were actually doing a very, very good job documenting stuff. And you know, what I would refer you to the most is. Unfortunately, is the page before the appendix, where it talks about these were very sick people that we were dealing with. Not only did they have severe mental health issues, but many of them had severe physical issues. And the reality is, unlike what happens at the hospital and what happens at PCS, we were not only satisfying our clients, we were doing amazing work with these people. You know, these were really very, very hard folks. Now, let me give you our version of the timeline. So, it's funny that we had to comply with, according to Ms. Lorenz, Chapter 34 by June 23rd, seeing as the Crisis Resource Center didn't open until September 3rd of 2012. So I don't know how we were supposed to comply at that date when we weren't even open yet. You know, when we were awarded this contract, it was made clear that getting the Crisis Resource Center on the north side open expeditiously was important to the administration. Why was it important? Because you had added $3 million to the BHD budget to do these kinds of services, and as of August, nothing was in place. Not a dime had been spent. So we rushed, and looking back, maybe I shouldn't have done that, but we rushed at the request of the, and so we got this building and this service up, got the building set up, hired the staff in approximately 6 weeks, and we opened up on September 3rd. Interestingly enough, I had a very high-level staff person at TLS, which runs the Southside Center, say to me, gee, it took us 3 years to figure out how to run a CRC. They gave you 2 months. Because we opened up on September 3rd, and by the middle of December, we were being audited already. Supervisor Schmidt, if I can just address your question. Yeah, we needed some time in order to make this work. This is a very tough service, very tough people. We were working really hard. And thank God for the Vital Voices report, for the Consumer Satisfaction report. Otherwise, it would just be my word against a bunch of bureaucrats. But the clients are saying that they were getting good service. The clients were saying that we were saving their lives. And I'll put my stock in this era of person-centered care, I'll put my stock in the person that's getting the care. And they were obviously getting the care. You know, we have a long history and experience of working with the people BHD doesn't want to work with. I've got psychiatric nurses every night going under the bridges and under the viaducts trying to pull mentally ill people out to get them to someplace that's safe and warm. We run Autumn West on 34th. And Lisbon, which is a transitional housing for homeless people that have mental health issues. We run a domestic violence shelter with a lot of mental health issues. We run the largest family shelter for homeless families in the state of Wisconsin. It's not like We don't know what we're doing, but we knew what we were doing. Unfortunately, we didn't want to create another mini hospital. If moving services into the community ends up meaning that we have just multiple small mini hospitals, then we haven't done anything. And I think at the very beginning, we had a philosophical, you know, difference about the way we wanted to serve people. We know how to serve these people. We do it successfully. They don't. They don't. And the proof of the pudding, again, is back to the Vital Voices. These people were pleased with the service they were getting. We were helping them. So you have in your packet, I believe, a June 4th letter that we wrote, because we had concluded that this relationship just wasn't going to work. We weren't going to run the program that they wanted us to run. So if you notice in your June 4th letter from myself to BHD, we say, you're obviously not happy with us. We don't want to change our program. You're obviously not happy with us. But if it's your desire to change vendors for this program, we will work with you during to transition to a new vendor. Please meet with us to talk about how we move forward changing to a new vendor. We will help you. In fact, we talked about internally and with TLS, we said, hey, we will lease you the building, come in, hire our staff, and, I mean, you don't have to hire all the staff, hire the staff you want, and let's do a seamless transfer. Because, again, what's the hurry to closing this facility? There's no health or safety violations. People are happy. They're getting fed. Things are going well. That the response to that June 4th letter was an audit at which came with a termination. We didn't even have a chance to respond to that second audit because the audit came with the a termination. One really quick example of the philosophical differences that we have. We went round and round with why in our policy and procedures memo doesn't it say when a staff should call 911 and when they shouldn't? And we came up with some language, but I'm thinking, my goodness, if I have a staff person that has to go look at a manual to decide whether to call 911, it's a little late. And I'm going to fire that person, but apparently at BHD they get promoted because they were able to follow the manual. Well, that's not the kind of service we run. It's just not the kind of service that we run. In summary, Madam Chair, and I really thank you for this time, had BHD taken us up on our June 4th letter, we could have worked out a seamless transition. At the end of the day, this was a cutting-edge service, which unfortunately BHD staff just never understood what we were trying to do. But we were being successful. Again, all of the audit issues are file issues. They're paper issues. We concede we needed to get better at that, and we were getting better. But in terms of the services, in terms of the people that were in the building, I again implore you to look at the comments in the Vital Voices survey and realize the wonderful work that staff was doing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Volk. Do you have Supervisor Mayo and then Supervisor Taylor, followed by Director Colon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment to Mr. Volk. Your contract started September 3rd. You had 2 months prior to that, you stated, and then they came with an audit.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Volk, my question, a question for you. Do you know the standards of EHS 34?
I do, sir.
Did you have that in your contract, sir, that you would do that standard? And the other one is the standard for they said you have poor standards for something else.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? DH-34 and the crisis.
Yes.
Okay. Do you understand what they were talking
about? I
do. Can you tell me your version of this, please?
Well, I mean, Chapter 34 is a very long Ed
just some
administrative
just some
code. Well, it governs the way that crisis resources should be provided in the state of Wisconsin, of course, in Milwaukee County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without getting you into the rabbit hole of getting into he said this part of the audit, I said this part of the audit, I believe that we substantially met the requirements of Chapter 34, and we're well on our way to solving the paperwork issues that we had.
So basically your concern, that your issue that they're saying, because I want to talk to Cologne, is paperwork, not the providing the service to the clientele.
I believe if you look at the audit, almost everything relates to stuff that should be in a file, and when you look at the Vital Voices consumer report, it becomes very obvious that we were providing a very valuable service to people.
Okay. The other question is, Mr. Vogt, were you in this business prior to RSP, this particular business?
No, we have not run a crisis resource center in the past.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Cologne, if that was the case, that Community Advocate was not in the business of running a crisis center, how could they score higher than someone who was in the business?
Sure. I can't speak to that entirely, but generally speaking, I mean, there's a objective criteria that we have. All organizations are given an opportunity to compete for those requests for proposals. We have an independent panel of members that score these proposals, and in this case, Community Advocates scored better than MCFI.
Well, Mr. Cologne, and let's make it very clear, I'm not in favor of putting our residents into the community. I've been on record for that for the longest. But since that what people was trying to move that way, it seemed like, and I have not talked to Mr. Volk or anyone because of the fire, I have not seen any emails or anything like this. But prior to this young lady, she was stating the standards in the fourth correction plan, and she went back and said they started with the 1-2 and the third, and they flipped to the fourth. If you have a four correction plan, you work with the fourth one, if the one should succeed of all the other ones, and just work off that plan to make sure they understand what's going on. That's how the county used to do it in the past, but I don't know what they're doing now. Because once you get that correction plan, that's the plan you're going to go off of, and it did not work. And I think you, again, this is showing how our patience is at risk, but you didn't have. I didn't hear from the young lady at all that they had concerns about the patients. My understanding that I've been hearing is about poor paperwork and documentation. Even in this thing that they hand out today, they didn't talk about no qualifications of poor standards of patient service. So, again, if this is how we're going to go and put our patients into this and the documentation is not there, we don't want patients to start falling to the wayside.
Right.
And I'm very disappointed in this whole situation, because if you give somebody 2 months and you think they're supposed to come up to speed and they didn't, and they have not been in the business, one, are you sending them for failure? Two, was it just saying we're giving you opportunity, but we're coming back to knock you out? Because if the 34 standard, the crisis standards, is about paperwork, well, you can shake your head, but I don't see nothing else in here.
Right.
So I'm just disappointed in this whole situation.
Madam Chair, can I respond?
Supervisor Taylor, and then Director.
Was there a question he was supposed to answer?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not really.
All right. I guess my question, so Mr. Volk, you were saying that you were rushed in the beginning in August. You want to explain, you know, who you're rushed by administration?
Yes, there was a, if you remember, at the end of 2012, you were forced as a county board to move $1.2 million over to the Planning Council because somehow, even though BHD knew that the county executive was putting in the 2012 budget back in September of 2011, one could have assumed that the county board probably would go along with that. So one would think that there would start to be some planning as to how to spend that $3 million in 2012. That it was made very clear to us that it would be a good thing if we could open up the Crisis Resource Center as soon as possible. Otherwise, Madam Chair, Supervisor Taylor, you would have had to have transferred much more money over to the Planning Council at the end of 2012 because BHD hadn't figured out a way to spend it. I, you know, Madam Chair, you can rule us out of order, but I still think today there's still money at the Planning Council even after what you get done doing in terms of transferring it today. You're still allocating 2012 money for BHD services when there's all this need out here. I mean, you're in July, and we still haven't spent 2012 money.
This ain't
so that would have well. That's sort of chair to rule whether it's germane or not.
Thank you, Supervisor Taylor. You have. The floor.
So the question is, you were chosen and selected in August, then you had how much time to get this up and running?
There was no timeline, but it was clear that there needed to be something tangible from the $3 million that was put in the 2012 budget. So I interpreted that we should get this going as soon as possible. In retrospect, if I had known that they were going to be down my throat only 2 months after the fact, I probably would have taken more time and been much more deliberate in getting that thing open.
Well, I wasn't here for the 2012 budget. I know that the $3 million came out of the EMS paramedic program, and I remember during the last budget arguing, you know, we had to move the money around, saying, you know, why do we move $3 million when we don't have a plan? Why did it take the administration till the middle of last summer, late last summer, to actually start doing this? And, you know, we end up having to roll over $1.7 or something like that $1 million. Are we saying that the administration isn't to blame at all, that we, you know, this time 2 years ago, you guys were starting to know that probably you're going to have $3 million in the budget to do some of this, and so we waited to late last year to start, you know, I mean, there's no blame for the administration whatsoever. This is all this organization's fault. Is that what I'm hearing today? Or you know, why did it take that long? Why were we waiting until August to start spending, you know, 2012 dollars? Did we not have a plan? Because this seems unfortunate. Man. I think Supervisor Mayo said, you know, for what I'm hearing, it's not that the clients are being harmed.
Sure.
And so I guess I'd like to see where they are. Because if it is just paperwork, then maybe that's something that, now that this is all on the table, we can all get together and correct it. Because what's the option here?
Right. We have. Madam Chair, Supervisor Taylor,
we haven't been involved.
I just want to say very clearly and very directly, nobody, not one person in this administration or BHD told you to open up the Crisis Resource Center because we needed to spend this money. That's totally a lie. It's untrue and unacceptable. Secondly, I want to just say that this is not about community advocates and the services that they provide. They do good work, and they serve some of the most vulnerable in this community. This is not about those programs. This is about a specific program. It's Northside Crisis Resource Center. And just to me, using Joe's words, we're not going to run a program that BHD wants us to run. They shouldn't apply for the RFP. This is what the RFP called for, a crisis resource center with standards and rules and guidelines that they were unwilling to abide by.
in his words, he didn't want to run this program. You shouldn't apply for the RFP, and you're in agreement now that you don't want to run the program. We aren't going to allow you to run a free-willing program that's outside of the guidelines that we feel are necessary to provide the appropriate care for these individuals. And just let me say that there is a huge clinical oversight issue here. There's a requirement of clinical oversight that he doesn't have at his facility, and I would say that's very important. So I just wanted to...
Madam Chair, if I could respond briefly. I didn't say that someone told me I had to open the Crisis Resource Center on a certain date. I said that it was made clear to me that opening up soon would be a good idea.
I don't know who told you that.
Well, and if I could also try to react to Supervisor Mayo's question about the RFP. The reason we scored so high on the RFP is because RFPs are scored by independent panels, of which the majority are from the community and not bureaucrats. So what we wrote hit a chord with that panel. And much of the going back and forth on corrective action plans was, in my opinion, BHD trying to make us run the program that we had not applied for, that had not scored so highly, but looked more like the hospital. So part of that going back and forth over four plans was essentially a battling over what kind of philosophy this program was going to have.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Go ahead, Supervisor Taylor.
So, moving forward, what's in the patient's or the client's best interest moving forward? I mean, let's forget what's happened in the past. Now, who's going to care for these people? I guess it is because falling through the cracks is not an option. And I still haven't heard any, explanation from the administration of why it took till late summer to actually start implementing some of these things. I wasn't here for the 12 budget, but there are some that were that gave $3 million to do these things. Yeah, and how much of that money is still available? I guess that's the question I'd like to know also from the 2012 budget. So what's in the what's in the best interest of the clients moving forward? Where are these people going to go? Why did it take so long to start this? Another question would be is, do we normally have an audit a couple months after we open something like this? And so if that's yes, then I'd like the explanation just on the record. And then how much money is left?
Okay. In regards to how much money is left, we actually have a report on that before us upcoming item. So that answer, that question will be answered, and you'll be able to ask questions about that.
All right.
Yep. All right. And then the other questions you would like Director Colon to answer? Okay.
Madam Chair, Supervisor Taylor, so we have a plan right now to serve these individuals, and there's capacity in the community through our crisis stabilization beds or through the Southside CSP. The combination of those, Southside Crisis Resource Center, the combination of those beds give us the capacity to serve the individuals that were being served by the Northside Crisis Resource Center. There is going to be a longer-term strategy to ensure that there is another Northside Crisis Resource Center on the north side, and we feel very confident that that can happen in a relatively short period of time. But the most important part is in the interim, there's enough capacity to continue to serve these individuals. And the most important part here is that you can have all the capacity, but if you're not up to standards with the quality of care that's required to run this program, I'm sorry, we can't put our the county cannot put ourselves in a position where we knowingly somebody's not up to standards and continue to have the contract with them. BHD has spent a lot of time in partnership trying to get up to standards, but I want to point you back to a common Joe Volkmig. We're not going to run a program that BHD wants us to run. He doesn't want to run this program. So maybe now he's realized that, and he'll entertain other programs that we have available. He doesn't want to run this program, and we need somebody that wants to run this program.
And the question that I asked regarding why it took so long, why were we doing this in August, why this stuff wasn't ready to be rolled out in January, February, March, why did it take so long? Why sure. Administration knew this, they had this money, the budget was passed, why did it take so long?
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisors, I can't entirely answer that question. I came in towards the end of 2011, but I can tell you this. There were some practical reasons of why the monies weren't able to be spent throughout that whole year, and that's why we did have, of the $3 million, we had $1.1 million that we wanted to make sure we set aside so that we can reinvest, so that we can invest that money into the community. But moving forward, like in this budget, you'll see $4 million of new investments. And I've asked staff to carefully plan out what needs to be done by when in order to ensure that that money is spent at the right time. So we're working on that.
I'll finish up here.
Go ahead. We still have the floor, Mr.
Because I was going to say is, when we, like $4 million you're asking for. And what happened was in the 2012 budget, the board had to raise taxes to fill the EMS hole
right.
at $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. So when you budget and then don't spend it, that money could have, that 1.1 could have gone, and there's another 1.1 that didn't go to the taxpayers. So when you budget, you better make sure that you follow through and actually, you know, implement what you were planning on implementing with that $4 million. Because if you're sitting there constantly rolling over, I may not be that willing to give you $4 million. Me personally,
right.
if you don't have a track record of actually spending it where you say you're going to or in a timely manner.
Good point. Madam Chairman, if I can just make one final comment.
Well, I think we need to answer to the question.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You were going to...
Yeah, there has been board reports that have been submitted over the course of time as to what the timelines are for those $3 million. There was multiple RFPs that were let in that calendar year to spend those. All those RFPs, there's timelines for each and every one of them, so it's really clearly defined why there was a delay in terms of spending the money and what programs got money at what point in the year. So all that information is available. It's something that I don't have right now, but we can get it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I'd also like to, I think for the record, just say that what I heard Mr. Volk say was not that he was not willing to run the program, but what he said was is that he and his staff completed an RFP, submitted an RFP, stating this is the type of program that they were going to run, and once that RFP was accepted, he believed that he would then be able to run the program that he had outlined in that RFP. And so then these additional things that were placed on him were not part of that RFP, and therefore he didn't believe that he needed to accept that.
I just have one final comment.
Go ahead.
Director Cologne just presented a standard of care that they can't put people into facilities that don't meet standards. Damn it, close the hospital today. Mm.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Can I also add that the RFP response submitted by Community Advocates on April 6th, in that RFP response, in there it clearly states that Community Advocates will be adherent to all standards of DHS 34. And within that DHS 34, that outlines the type of staff you must have, the services you will provide, the documentation of those services, the clinical array of services that will be occurring, and all policy and procedures that must be in place. And that was, Community Advocates did submit that and state that they would be in adherence to all parts of DHS 34 in their RFP response in April of 2012.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Mayo, and then Supervisor Wyshon.
Madam Chair, I normally support, first I'm going to say the county employees, at BHD is doing an omen's job. But you have to make sure that if we don't have our house in order, and there's a number of other places, houses are not in order, and we work with them. And that's my concern is, I don't like going to the private sector anyway, or even the nonprofit sector. So let's make that very clear. I'm saying that again. Mm-hmm. But we, every time we have an issue at BHD or anything dealing with the mental health or anything, I'm there for you. I'm trying to give you all the money you have. But we are not getting our house in order. I know that you want to make sure that we have a standard. And all of our vendors that we have may have the HD, whatever that is, 34, but they do their program. This is about paperwork. And this is also about if you have the person who's a CSS behind their name and all that. But it's not. You still haven't told me about the care. And that's the number one thing that we are always looking for, is the care of the patients. Now, they are wrong. Community Active, and it's about Community Active right now, they are wrong. They do not do the paperwork. But they program the care of the patients that we here for, they have done. And that's where y'all need to tell, hey, if you can't do the paperwork, this is our standard, boom, boom, boom. We have a concern about that. Because you can't tell me that all the different programs, St. Charles and all of them, is actually doing the same kind of program we do at BHD. But they might have the standard of care. They may have the SSI behind their names and all the right people look, do the background checks and make sure that they know all that. They need the people, when they come and look at the RFP, they better have that in order. But when that care come, and you know that's the number one thing that I, since I've been on this board, talking about the care of the patients. And that's, no one still haven't denied and said they did not have the care of the patients first. And again, I don't want them to go there. I want the county to stay in the business. But no one said that they didn't have that. Now my question for you, or whoever it is, how many beds on the north side? I mean, how many crisis beds we have on the north side right now? And how many stabilization beds we have on the north side? I mean, because every time we mention this, we talk about the shelters. When somebody have, because normally when a person from the north side have a mental illness, they take it up where? BHD. And then we finally got something on the north side that they have another alternative. We closed it. Oh, almost caught myself. We closed it. So, tell me how many beds we have on the north side right now. That, not BHD. Mercy beds that we can go to. And the stabilization beds, they're called?
Crisis
stable bed on the north side. And you know north side is anything north of Wisconsin Avenue. Please tell me.
Supervisor Mayo, we have 16 crisis stabilization beds on the north side of Milwaukee. I don't have counts from this morning, but as of yesterday, we had two beds available in our crisis stabilization system.
Okay, out of 16, two is available. And how many standard beds we got? You got to set some other kind of beds on the north side right now.
The crisis stabilization beds, we have 8 beds off of Silver Spring, and then we have an additional 8 beds at our facility off of Valete.
Of who?
Off of Valete.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Supervisor Weishan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess what I'm getting out of the conversation today is that somebody looked at the number of beds that we needed, and that they decided that with the community capacity and then the Southside Crisis Center, that met the capacity. And then you guys just decided to terminate the contract for the north side because you didn't think you needed it anymore. I'm just saying that when I look at this and from the conversation today, because that's what you said, the need can be met by the beds that we have in the community plus the Southside Crisis Center, and that we shouldn't worry about the closure of this facility because all the clients will get the services that they need. So that's where, like I said, I'm just listening to the conversation today and for that. And so it sounds like you just, from a financial point of view, you looked at it and said, okay, we don't really need this one, so let's eliminate it. So that's the, at least the, from the conversation today, that's what I'm getting from this. And what concerns me about that is, one, if that isn't the case, I'd like you to explain that. And then two, I get the feeling that this is sort of like a mini redesign without our input. And that's where I need some clarification on that.
Okay. And who would you like to answer that for you?
Well, it seems we have a person in the back with their hand up. So.
All right. Alex.
Madam Chair, Supervisor. from a financial perspective, we were not in, that money is in the budget. It's maintained in the budget in 2014. There's no intention whatsoever to not use that money for its intended purpose. I also want to mention, and I haven't had a chance, that part of DHS 34, if it's not met, we cannot bill for that service area. In terms of DHS 34, it has to be met before we can bill Medicaid and get revenue for those services. So as much as it can be perceived as just paperwork, it has to be met for us to be able to bill successfully, and we do that within our hospital and within our other systems. We require that all of our vendors and internally that we meet those standards so we can bill properly. So in terms of the financial side of this, we have no intention of moving that funding. It's actually outlined in our 2014 request to maintain the funding.
Well, I understand that, but usually we give people, I mean, I've been on the board long enough that we, and I think you've been here long enough, we've given plenty of organizations more than 2 months to get their paperwork in order on that. So that issue kind of stuff, and I can understand, we want to have, and I think you ought to be in compliant with the contract. If the contract says it's, you got to comply with what is it? Statute 34. That's what you signed up for. You got to be compliant with it. But like I said, from the conversation today, it's more about the capacity in the so-called community plus the crisis resource center on the south side that seems to meet the need of the clients that are out there. And you claim that the money is going to stay in here, but I think anybody who sits in a finance meeting who sees how we move money around and all of this and how we magically end up with a $25 million surplus at the end of the year somehow, you know, knows that you can earmark whatever you want and it just gets transferred later on throughout the year. So, like I said, I'm more concerned about this sort of like mini redesign that I think needs to be explored here and how we are actually going to provide service to clients.
Okay. Thank you. Director Colon?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Weishan, I just want to make it very clear. In fact, I sent a letter and CC'd the Chairwoman, Roma West, to MCFI, asking them to provide us with a plan so we are committed to having a crisis resource center on the north side. That shows my commitment to doing that. We believe it's a good service. We believe it should be there. And so I want to say, I want to come back to the reason this decision was made didn't have anything to do with capacity. The reason this decision was made because Community Advocates wasn't up to standards. And as Joe Volk has said, they don't want to run the program that BHD wants them to run, which is according to standards. So we can't put ourselves in a position to continue to allow an organization to run a program that's not up to standards.
Madam Chair, then I guess that when you, if you follow through with this, with Independence First,
MCFI,
right, that you notify them today that we will be there knocking on their door 2 months from now to make sure that they are compliant, and if they are not compliant, then we will be looking for a third vendor, because we have to be consistent on this, because I, like I said, I'm very suspicious about this whole thing and what direction this is really taking.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Weishan. What is the timeline then for MCFI to come in? And if you don't mind me asking, why would you not take this opportunity to RFP this particular service again and see if you could tap into someone who, you know, I mean, we are using nothing against MCFI. I love MCFI. Mr. Hill's in the back, and I think with him at the helm, you are in the most capable hands. I'm just wondering, again, when we decided to open the north side Crisis Resource Center. We did send it out for RFP. We did end up going with Community Advocates, who wasn't in the game. You know, why wouldn't we try to expand that market here in Milwaukee County, seeing as how we are moving to a community-based system, you know, in choosing MCFI, and again, no disrespect intended, you're kind of creating a monopoly here. Why wouldn't you open that up and see if, you know, a Phoenix Care system or somebody else out there would be willing and able to step up and open that facility. Mr. Kubitschek.
Madam Chair, Supervisors, there's two reasons for that. And both of them are of equal importance. One is timing.
Okay.
If we had to open another RFP, reissue an RFP, that's going to delay this 4, 5, 6 months before we can transition into another facility. Under our current contract rules, because MCFI TLS submitted an RFP, we are able to go with that vendor without reopening the RFP process. The other more important reason is they've done a good job. MCFI TLS has done a very good job of running the Southside CRC. They have undergone the same audits, the same requirements that Community Advocates had, and they're doing it. They are, and it's a very successful program. Their Vital Voices surveys look very well as well. They look really, really good.
Okay. The timing is the thing that makes me nervous, because clearly we had, whether it's implied or expressed, we had some type of timing issue with Community Advocates opening this facility. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it just makes me, you know, it makes me a little nervous that we're putting all of our eggs in one basket, if you will, when it comes to community resource, crisis resource centers in Milwaukee County. And so, again, I just wanted to put that out there. It's, you know, we have the opportunity now. We've already switched. We are already utilizing the crisis stabilization beds or the Southside Resource Center. You know, maybe at this point it would be the best option to go ahead and to do an RFP process, since the service, if you will, has already been it's already been interrupted, and so we're kind of, you know, we're working with it on the as interrupted right now, and so to interrupt it for a couple months longer to ensure that, again, we don't have a situation in the future where, you know, possibly MCFI decides, as Community Advocates did, you know, we don't want to be in this business anymore, we don't want to be a partner with Milwaukee County, and then we find ourselves in a situation where we have no backup.
Madam Chair, Supervisors, there's the short-term plan, and then there's the mid-range plan, and then there is a long-term plan. Short-term plan is not optimal. Using the stabilization houses and the existing crisis resource center beds is, I'm going to call it a Band-Aid, until we can get the new beds up and running. We will, both RFPs will be on an RFP schedule and will be opened up for RFP again, I believe, the end of, or during the year 2014. So this is not going to be a forever kind of a situation. It will be opened up for RFP. I don't know what the date, sequence of dates will be when we open it up for the RFP, but it's going to be in at the end of 2014.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kubitschek. I've got Supervisor Mayo, Supervisor Weishaupt, Supervisor Bowen.
My quick question for you: when whoever doing the Southside Resource Center, when they started, did they have growing pains, and did you give them a two-month audit?
Exactly.
That's all I wanted to know.
Supervisor Mayo, the creation of the Southside CRC, they actually were not fully funded by BHD and under contract. They actually came out of a grant that was written by a community member, and community providers came together and opened up CRC. BHD was a member of that, but they were not fully financed by BHD and still aren't. So they opened in a very different way. The Northside CRC was a full BHD county contracted service.
Even though we have, even though there's a grant and there's matching money, Milwaukee County has a lot of, have number of times have audited their portion of the money to see exactly where the money went and how the program's going. And my question again, did they have the same treatment growing pains when they started, and did Milwaukee County go out within 2 months and do it? Because right now there's, you are telling me there's a double standard, because I could show a program that we're doing right now that even though we put so much money in there, we are auditing our portion of the money right now, because a number of my colleagues on this committee want to make sure that we have done that. And now you're telling me that's something different. I just want to make sure that we have a fair level playing. And also I like what's Alice last?
Kotsky.
I like what you said. 34, if you didn't have the DH 34, then they shouldn't get paid. Because if we can't get our money, they can't get their money. And I think that's as good as a sentence to say, hey, get your paperwork in order, your staff in order, then you can get paid. But they qualify, but they did provide the service. Again, I'm going back. They gave our consumers the standard, what they needed.
Okay.
I got to go.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Mr. Volk.
Really, really quickly, first of all, CFI does TLS does a wonderful job on the South Side. They've been doing it for 3-4 years. And so, yeah, we went, you know, I thought we did pretty good for 2-4 months being able on the consumer side to do what we did. What Mr. Colon didn't tell you is that in the 2013 budget, the dollars allocated for the Crisis Resource Center on the north side go from $850,000 down to $500,000. So while it's still in the budget, we'll see if it survives. There was clearly a retrenchment on the Northside CRC. And lastly, the agreement that we have with BHD for the Crisis Resource Center was that, and I think Mr. Kubitschek will say that, is that we keep the Title 19 dollars. So if we're not able to bill because of lack of standards, it's no skin off of BHD's nose. That's my loss. And it's a loss, quite frankly, that we've incurred.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to clarify, you're talking about the 2014 budget.
I'm sorry,
correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I know, it's confusing. We talk about budgets. I know, I was listening to Supervisor Taylor say he wasn't here in 2012, and I was like, yes, you were. But we're talking about 2012 budget creation. Gotcha. Yeah. All right, Supervisor Weishaupt, and then Supervisor Bowen, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so the current operator of the South Side is going to be operating a facility on the north side? Is that so? We'll just have one contract?
Yes.
For that? Do we have
two separate contracts, I believe.
Okay.
One provider.
Right. One provider, two separate contracts, south side, north side. Do we have an overall number of beds that they will then oversee?
Supervisor Weishaupt, they currently oversee 7 beds at the Southside CRC, and then depending upon the location for the Northside CRC, we're anticipating 10 to 12 additional beds.
Okay, and then we plan on, for the whole thing, doing an RFP in sometime in 2014?
Supervisor, that's correct.
Yes.
In 2014, it will go up for RFP for 2015.
For services to be rendered in 2015.
Yes.
And do we have, is that normally a 1-year contract or a 3-year contract or 5 or?
It's typically a 1-year contract with two renewal years. So they're
we'll
1-year contract, so it's typically a 3-year.
Okay.
Up to 3 years.
Because it's just, you know, we have a propensity in the county to go with, you know, the people that we know kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So to me it seems that with a consolidation of services under one vendor,
going through an RFP process for somebody who, you know, just took over something in 2013, that kind of stuff, you're more likely to win the RFP because of just our own internal biases on that kind of stuff. So I think the likelihood of getting some kind of competitive model for services in 2015 on this glide path doesn't look like it's going to end up that way. It seems that you will just end up with a contract with the current provider for an additional 3 years.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Weishand. Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor Mayo asked the exact question that I wanted to ask with the same issue with MCFI when they started and if they were audited at the two-month cycle. So we are confirming that they were audited and had issues or didn't have issues at that two-month cycle. I wasn't clear on that.
Madam Chair, Supervisors, I believe the full first year that TLS MCFI had the CRC, had the Southside CRC, there was no county dollars that were attached to it. It was entirely funded by grants. And then I'm a little shaky on the time. It could have been after 2 years. I'm not exactly sure. But then
the first audit was after 2 years.
No, we weren't funding them at all. We had no funding for the Southside CRC.
Right. But what we're asking about is audit. Were they in compliance? Were they doing things right? Did they get an audit? Not even from us, but from another source on the quality of their programming, just like this program did.
It looks like Mr. Hill could answer that question. Mr. Hill, you want to come up and introduce yourselves to those people who are watching the live stream and individuals at the table who may not know who you are?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to respond to these questions. We had been under a Robert Wood Johnson pilot program grant for the first couple of years of the operation of what is known as the Crisis Resource Center on the South Side. You may rest assured that the rigor with which the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation oversaw our operations was intense. Once funding began coming from the county, which I think occurred in the third year, if I'm not mistaken, the third or fourth year of our operation, we then became subject to the usual and customary audits that are done of any contract agency or any agency with a contract with the Department of Human Services for the county or any other county agency for that matter. And once we evolved to the point where we sought CBRF licensure, which is what the central issue is here, we then also became subject to rigorous audits by BHD of our compliance with those standards. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, we just got done with one. We had citations for being out of compliance with a couple of issues. We submitted a corrective action plan. We sought and implemented the corrective actions, and we are now, if I'm not mistaken, and I'll defer to Ms. Lorenz, we are in compliance, in full compliance with the conditions of HFS 34 and all of the other conditions of the contract under which we operate the Southside CRC.
Okay. And your first audit was in the first couple of months when you finally connected with the county and got funding from the county.
That, Supervisor Bowen, I can get the answer for you. I don't have it right off the top of my head.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. And I have a few other
Go ahead.
Questions.
You have the floor.
Madam Chair, thank you. There was a comment about billing and being in compliance with DHS 34. Has that ever happened so far? So let's say that Community Advocates has not been in compliance for what you guys claim is about 6 months, 5 months of the auditing process. Did we not collect Medicare dollars for that time period?
We did not. And Mr. Volk was, if I may, Mr. Volk was accurate. As part of the negotiation, we did negotiate that there would be a pass-through of those Medicaid dollars for crisis stabilization. But that's just for the crisis stabilization straight Medicaid money. That the county would
would bill and maintain any HMO, T19 HMO revenue, which we have not billed for either. So we've not billed anything for the Northside CRC.
And to be clear, that money would be money going to community advocates, or would that Medicare money be money come to the county?
It's both.
Both.
The straight Medicaid revenue would be a pass through to through the county and to community advocates, and the HMO revenue, the T19 HMO revenue, would be maintained by the county.
Do we have an estimation on how much funding we're referring to?
I wouldn't begin to hazard a guess. We could easily get it. It's just based on bed days and how many folks with HMOs were there.
Okay. And I guess my next question is for Mr. Vogt. Looking at the audit, there were some things missing, and you acknowledged that something as stark as missing a medical director as well. I understand having more time. But were there... It sounds like there were these attempts to, from the administration, meeting with your organization, trying to get corrective action plans. And what I don't understand is not the administration not accepting mm-hmm. some of those plans because of specificity or things of that nature, and trying to work with you. So in trying to address some of those issues, I guess I'd like to hear from you
sure.
as part of the organization on what your organization did.
I mean, in terms of the medical director, I'm not sure that BHD still holds that we needed to have a medical director. If they do, I'll be happy to get a letter from the state of Wisconsin, the people that oversee Chapter 34, that clearly states that what you need is either a medical director or a psychologist at a PhD level, which has certain licensure. We had the psychologist. The way Chapter 34 reads, and I, you know, urge you to take it. It's not real long. Is that we could have either or. I just wanted to also address one of your questions, Supervisor Bone. Whether or not, and again, MCFI does a wonderful job on the South Side. They've been doing it a long time. Whether or not the county had a contract with them or not doesn't matter, because they were operating, as we were told, under the county's Chapter 34 license. It's the county that holds the Chapter 34 license. So MCFI, for years, apparently, just as we, has been operating under the 34 license. What that means is that if MCFI were to get audited by the state at the Crisis Research Center on the South Side, those findings would accrue to BHD. So apparently, then, MCFI went a number of years working under the county's Chapter 34 license without an audit.
Okay. And further questions, Madam Chair? I'm just trying to
go ahead.
Go through this. like Mr. Vogt said, they by law don't need a medical director, and they had a, what's this,
psychologist. A doctorate level psychologist with a bunch of initials after his name.
Okay. So if that's the case, and that's listed in this audit as not being in compliance, but he technically still would be, how do you explain including that in the audit?
Madam Chair, Supervisor Bowen, Joe is incorrect. He's referencing a specific part of the code in the statutes where it talks about clinical director. The clinical director could be a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but a psychiatrist is required from a clinical perspective to oversee the services that are there. He knew that. In fact, he put it in his RFP. He approached Dr. Thrasher at his open house, so this is not something that he was not aware of. This is something that he knew was a requirement of ours. And it's in statutes, so that's just the way it has to be run.
Gotcha. And my last question is, I remember after being elected, get on the board, and this coming past us in that fall, the fall or around the time of the budget when we made the move and let 1.7 And this was a part, the Northside CRC.
1.1.
That 1.1 allocation. So we approved that contract, but and maybe the Madam Chair was more involved in this than we were, but it did not come to the committee to discuss this contract and ending it, and I'm trying to figure out why.
Thank you.
Okay.
And just for the record, I had no knowledge. I received a letter as part of the Mental Health Redesign Committee stating that the CRC was going to be closed. There was no prior. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I did receive a telephone call from Mr. Colon stating that there was going to be a meeting between community advocates and our staff, letting community advocates know that the contract would be ended.
Right, but the decision to terminate was already made by
right.
then.
Right, oh yeah, definitely.
So I'm trying to figure out why was
I
not
had no piece in
mm-hmm.
that.
Why the decision to terminate did not make its way to the committee? That's my question.
Director Colon, go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair, Supervisor Bowen, maybe Corporation Counsel can weigh in on this, but I think this is clearly administration management issue. Yeah. I mean, we need to oversee the program, and, and that's what we did. The program wasn't running according to standards, and we need to make a management decision and terminate the contract. And that's what we did.
Okay. Supervisor Taylor?
I would just add that Director Colon is absolutely correct. That is definitely where that's an administration matter. But at the same time, when the board passes a budget, and then you're supposed to implement it. So if things don't happen in a timely manner, then what happens at the end of the year? We've got to scramble and push money over to the following year. That's when the administration has to accept responsibility for not getting the job done in a timely manner. So when you want to be administration, be administration, but don't then kind of shirk the responsibility when things don't work out as planned. And that's been my problem since I've been here, is not your department, but just the administration in general. Things go wrong, board's fault. Things go right, it's all the exec's credit. Just saying.
Thank you. Supervisor Mayo?
Basically, there might be the administration side, but if there's appeal, it come back here. We can get it anyway.
Right.
Madam Chair, this has been a very lively and strong conversation. Unless none of my colleagues, if they have any more conversation, I like to just call the question as information. So I'm trying to cut off the bait.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't believe you can call a question on an informational item. Supervisor Bowen, Supervisor and Supervisor Schmidt still wish to speak on this item, and I do have one more card.
Yes, you can.
One more point, and I'm done.
Question. There's the question that you could cut off the bait. Calling the question, calling the bait. If there was informational, if there was a action item, we can call. Then we call on the action item. But since it's informational, I'm calling the question to cut off the debate, and then we can move on.
Okay.
It's your decision, but I'm just saying, you can call core counsel, they tell you.
Okay. Well, I I'd like to be respectful. Supervisor Bowen and Supervisor Schmidt would both like to still speak on this, and I do have a card from the audience, and so I'm going to allow our committee members to continue this to ask their questions, and we're going to hear from the public, and then we'll cut this off.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The only point I wanted to make was that I understand it's a management decision.
Mm-hmm.
It can be interpreted as a management decision to terminate this contract, but I agree with Supervisor Wyshon. It is a legislative decision that we already made in the budget that we wanted beds on the north side of Milwaukee. And this is a decision that they are pretty much changing the scope of the budget in the sense that we wanted this service to continue, not be disrupted. So I didn't see a plan that said that we would pick another vendor to continue the service. It just said stop this service. So if it's a crisis resource, I don't think that's a resource that you would just stop in a community and leave individuals that need this resource hanging in the balance. Okay. And not be able to access it on the north side of Milwaukee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And that is part of the reason why we have it in front of us today, so that we were able to express what exactly happens from this point going forward. And if someone here had a different plan, then you could have brought something forward. Hold on. Supervisor Schmidt.
Well, when we've come full circle, I asked the questions, you know, 2 hours ago, whatever. And everybody pretty much said the same question all the way through as far as, I did visit the Southside Resource Center when we had this first debate. It's the first time I've been on this committee, so I don't pretend to be an expert. I don't pretend to be an expert in anything. Mm-hmm. These questions are just, you know, I asked Madam Chair, and I don't mind admitting it. I said, well, where are we going here? You know, I mean, kind of decision made for us, the cat's out of the bag. We all said we need something. Now, we did have some correspondence from Director Clone saying, well, we're gonna, you know, we have someone who can do this, and we did get their, I thought, commitment today that we're going to have a crisis a resource center on the north side. But, mm-hmm. you know, again, it's a situation we've been in now for a while. It's not going to get any better, it looks like, is that, you know, yeah, I mean, the administration has the rights to run, and I respect some of the things that have been said. But, you know, what I saw on the south side, I think a key is, I mean, who runs it? Now, admittedly, you know, Community Advocates wasn't in this business specifically. No one has said no one's doing a good job and no one's taking care of people. They've done a good job in the community. So has, MCI, or the Milwaukee Independent Center. And they pick up the ball. But I think that person was in the business, the director there that I talked to. I went to the upstairs and the downstairs and this kind of stuff. But he was a real advocate. He was dedicated to his profession. I mean, this guy was there for how many years? And he's here. Huh? Hi there. Remember me? How long ago was that? No, thank you. I'll get back on track here. But see, there's a key too. And when you did the RFP, and this is my complaint, I guess a little bit. You said, well, you had someone or a group who was really experienced in this area, and they had their growing pains and stuff like this. And you know. And this is why you asked in the beginning, well, did this group, Mr. Volk, Community Advocates, did they really have, they didn't have that benefit? Then that had been understood, right? And if they didn't have the experience, then they needed more time. They didn't have an experience, someone who's dedicated their life to running a crisis resource center, and obviously has done a very good job, okay? And so, but crisis, I mean, the independence wasn't picked, okay? They were picked. So what expectations did you have, I guess, in the beginning that, you know, and if they were so good, why didn't you take them in the first place then and not put them in a situation where they didn't have, no, they wanted to do it, I guess. So you have to bear some responsibility, obviously, here. Okay, so we're back, right? I mean, where are we going? And it's just very frustrating again, and because, you know, things have always run in checks and balances, and, you know, it was kind of understood we're supposed to be in this together, and you know, the board's criticized everywhere all the time, but we have to make the decisions, and we have to live with the decisions. So I just don't understand why going forward, I don't give a damn what the state bill says to an extent. Okay, is we need to communicate better. Okay, you know, if you had all these problems, you had all this stuff here. I guess I'm just complaining. I'll be done soon.
Go ahead.
Okay, we wouldn't be here if we don't care about our jobs either, okay? And we're trying to get the people's work done, and I mean that sincerely. And we're dysfunctional because we represent all different communities. We represent the city, who dominates, and we represent suburbs. So we're not going to agree on stuff all the time, you know. But we do agree on helping everybody that we can, and we seem to be all in agreement on that. Then why can't we just share information better then? You know, whether you can do it or not, you could at least tell us about it. You know, it didn't have to be a call to the chairwoman that, well, you're closing this, when it's so important. I understand, yeah, we went through all this stuff, but did we have that before? Did we know what was going on? And then we're put in these impossible situations. He said, you said, and, you know, I don't care almost. I mean, I care just, and we all care in the same thing, don't we?
Let's just get the services to the people and get it done. Everybody's saying the same thing. So why the hell don't we do it? I mean, and why does it get so bureaucratic? And, you know, it's just very frustrating. And then we're put in these situations that we can you take it or leave it. And what do we take anymore? Okay? I mean, they're gone, I guess. You know, even if we wanted to say, well, maybe we should give them another chance, and, you know, and in the interim, so, you know, we can get all this other stuff set up so we don't lose the service, but that doesn't seem to be an alternative.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, I'm done. I just need to say this stuff.
No, thank you.
Supervisor Schmidt, they did make this decision, the administration did.
Yes.
So, if things happen, when there's a shortage and there's a problem, they have to take the responsibility. They made this call.
Right.
Until they get the MCIF or whatever up and running, then guess what? If there's a problem, you guys made this decision to terminate this. So
you
accept the responsibility if there's a problem.
No. Right. Well, I think the other part of the frustration that you're hearing from my colleagues is because we had an item before us last month where we gave an increase to the Northside Crisis Resource Center, and there was no discussion about the fact that they were not doing well or that you had higher expectations of them, and so we voted on giving them more money, and now within 2 days of that, found out that, you know, they weren't going to have a contract. So that's not up for debate. That's just a comment.
Yes.
I have a card here from John Hart, who said he is a peer specialist, and he is speaking for information only.
Do we move on after this?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there other?
I mean, there's a lot of other things. We got to wait for a lot of people.
We could spend the whole day on too.
Okay.
What are we going to do with that then?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and Supervisors. This is a new thing for me, so bear with me. I just wanted to mention about the work that we were doing over there. Really, I think the comment made about not wanting to run the facility that BHD wants us to run, it seemed, you know, I can't really speak for Mr. Volk. To me, I interpret that as a matter of priority. To us, it seemed to me that the priority was always in the clients. And if you read the Vital Voices, customer satisfaction was indeed very high. Mainly because, put simply, the innovation behind the CRC to me was treating people as people. You know, being a mental health consumer, I'm very used to being pointed at and labeled as a diagnosis. I'm used to being referred to as a diagnosis and attacked as a list of symptoms. But the CRC, I could see through and throughout that it was all about treating people as people with thoughts and aspirations and goals. And to me, if that doesn't fit into a certain bureaucratic qualification, we're still serving the consumers. So I guess I just wanted to say that nothing really has the capacity to inspire hope like a group of people who are all on your side and who genuinely care. It is a shame that the CRC contract had to end this way, but I think I can speak for the whole of Community Advocates when I say that there will be no end to the innovative and person-centered, person-driven care that will be provided.
Okay.
John is a peer specialist that worked at the CRC.
Okay, thank you very much. It does say peer specialist.
And he did a very good job, by the way.
You did. You did a wonderful job, and we really appreciate hearing from you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right, this was an informational item. I do believe we had lengthy information provided to us. I would appreciate a motion to receive and place this on file so that it can be before us on board day in case any of my colleagues would like to offer a solution. Okay, so I do have a motion to receive and place on file. On that motion, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Stamper.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Weishan.
Aye.
Bowen.
Aye.
Taylor.
Excused.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place this item on file is approved.
Okay. Thank you very much. Item number